Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. This is Steven Miranda.
This is Jeff Ellis, and it is Thursday, May 3rd, 2012.
Welcome back to episode 8.03, the NFL Draft Recap Show.
NFL Draft Recap, along with some very important news.
Yes, and some sad news in the NFL as well. But Jeffrey, you know, if we get through four or five picks, just remember,
that's more than we promised on Facebook.
That's right. We said we'd get to three, but just so much to
talk about.
Impression
of New York, Steven.
I love New York. I've decided that for all the people saying, I love New York, I just couldn't live there, I could live there. I could live there, and I'll tell you why. I spent a significant part of Thursday, prior to Thursday night at the draft, at Central Park. Remember, we split up. You went to, we both
it
together.
Was Friday.
Was that
then
Friday?
We went to the memorial. We went to the 9/11 memorial.
Oh, no, Thursday we did TV. See, it just, it's all jumbled.
Well,
but, okay,
is
so
that
Friday.
What you love about New York? That it all jumbles together
and you can't separate one day from another? Yes, yes. It was just awesome. But
tell people about the 9/11 memorial, getting in. We've got a tip on how to get in if you don't have tickets.
No, I'm not even going to go there.
We have a
You need to get tickets. Register yourself.
But if you don't happen to have tickets, then you might want to find a group of students that are attending from out of the country.
We're not doing that.
And you might want to hold their flag.
Get tickets.
And help be a chaperone.
Register online the day before you want to go. Get tickets, print them out
and
on your computer.
And then throw yourself on the mercy of the court when you get caught.
There you go. But still, we had the tickets. I had registered
you
while we were standing
in line. You gave a nice contribution to the 9/11 Memorial Fund.
And
that got us more mercy from the court as we were well past three checkpoints of security.
Here's the deal, though. That it's touching. I still can't believe that. There's two things I can't believe about that. One, I can't believe how many people are there and they don't seem to grasp the immense tragedy that happened in these two buildings.
But again, in all fairness, those are mostly younger people.
Okay.
So they weren't there that they did not wake up that morning.
I still saw some older folks.
Okay.
You know, with the big smiles and here, take my picture in front of this tree. And, you know, and that's the survivor tree, the only tree that survived the blast. And they,
I'm okay with a picture smiling in front of the survivor tree. I'm not okay with a picture smiling in front of the memorial itself.
Yeah.
Where you're leaning on it. Now, wait, pose me properly. Make sure I've got this happy look on my face at something that is so completely horrific.
Just for any young people out there, get the context. I've never visited it, and it's on my bucket list. Is some World War II memorials like at Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
And I think I owe it to myself to learn about the history a little bit more and go and see some concentration camps possibly.
Yep.
And I feel that if I were to visit those places, it would be the same as how I felt when I was visiting the 9/11
memorial. Very similar when I visited, it was in Auschwitz, and I don't remember which one of the Holocaust sites, but
it's disturbing. I can't say that I knew anyone that passed away in the attacks. I don't know all the names of all the victims, but I don't believe I knew any of them. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I would have heard through my circles.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, just standing there and looking at some of the names, I found myself crying.
Yep.
Felt just because I'm thinking, you know, and we saw a name. We saw a lot of them. You saw more than me. The name of a woman and her unborn child. We
saw several
of those names. And I'm just thinking there, so here you are, you wake up in the morning, it's Tuesday, you're probably standing around the water cooler talking about Monday Night Football with your buddies, mm-hmm. and the next thing you know, you're dead. And that is how it happened for some people. They didn't even have a chance. They didn't even have a chance to know, oh my God, there's a possibility another plane might hit. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe those in the second tower might have had a chance to get out and stuff. But here you are, you're there, you're on the 40th floor or 50th floor, wherever the floor that the plane hit. And the next thing you know, a plane hits you and you die. And you have no chance.
You don't know anything. Next thing you know, there's no next thing.
You're just dead.
Yeah.
Then you have
the rest that from the film Incredibly Close, Extremely Loud, whichever the way that goes, that depicts somebody's story that did know what was going on.
Right.
It was trapped in some of the upper floors and the phone calls and the constant phone calls home, leaving messages. This is the status. I'm sure we're going to be okay. Well, I'm not sure we're going to be okay.
Right.
Choking sounds. And then, you know, over the course of an hour.
Yeah.
Where you see your death coming at you. I mean, just right. The whole variety. And then the first responders section that obviously was there that was so moving within the memorial of the people that ran into trouble.
Well, I'm standing there, and obviously a woman sees, you know, that I'm distraught. And she comes over, she puts her hand on my shoulder, and she's like, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah, I just, you know, I didn't really know anyone, but it just, it's very tragic." And she explains to me that she was on her way to the towers. She was on her way to work when the first plane hit, and she still was on her way to work when then she turned on the radio and she starts listening. Oh my gosh, you know, it looks like the towers have been hit by a plane, and she's listening while the second plane hits. And at this point, she doesn't know what to do because she's like literally at the base, basically. And they were like, everyone just go, like, nobody,
leave.
Everyone was starting to just start kind of like moving away from the towers. And she said she was 20 minutes late, and 20 minutes earlier, had she been on time, like she normally is, she's in the tower.
Yeah.
And I start sobbing more because I'm just like.
There's 3,000 stories of the dead and their families.
Yeah.
And then there's the how many thousands more of the people that were like her.
Right.
That this impacted so many people. There's virtually nobody in Manhattan that this didn't affect at one level or another personally, deeply personally. Yeah. And honestly, to be visiting there, you're walking on hallowed ground, on sacred ground, and you really have no business giggling with your friends and things. And that the grown-ups would take people to this site and not give them the heads up. I don't blame the kids as much as the grown-ups who brought them. Just give them the heads up that you don't goof
where
around
where
here.
You're walking in.
Yeah. So that was cool.
But and it is a beautiful memorial.
You went to Central Park. I went to Brooklyn.
So at that point, Jeff went to Brooklyn. I went to Central Park. And I found myself completely happy. I've been wanting to go to the center. I've needed to go to the center of the park. And basically, it's the park, the stairs with the big circle fountain where you see in, like, I don't know.
Every movie that's ever been made about New York.
Yes. There
it's
it is.
Iconic.
I want to go there. You know, last time we were there,
I know.
I had gone to Central Station.
You said you wanted to go to the park. So I didn't know.
Yeah, Jeff
so
just took
I just
over
took
to
you
the,
to one of my favorite parts
the
of the
middle corner of a park.
My favorite part of the park, you know, near the boathouse and stuff. Okay. One of my favorite parts, and which is featured again in that same movie.
Yes,
extremely close, incredibly
so
loud.
I've got some great shots, which I'm going to share with people. They will be up before this weekend.
I haven't seen
them. Yeah, Jeff hasn't even seen them. Of the park and just some of the cool things that happened there. So I'm walking back. I'm walking through the park. Little kids playing baseball right smack dab in the middle of a baseball field, right in the middle of the park, and these huge towering skyscrapers come out of the outfield, and you're like, okay, do these kids even know how freaking cool they've got it that they are standing at the bat, to getting ready to bat, and out in the outfield is this skyscraper coming out of the ground like it's outfield. It is so
part of the magic of New York City is that they had the forethought to actually allow the land, prime real estate, to go to such a large park. It is massive.
So Central Park's pretty awesome. I had a great time there, and I really spent probably all day. I went to Grape Papayas.
Which is really important.
It is, because Trisha's and I movie is Fools Rush In. And if you don't know the movie, you should go check it out. Selma Hayek, Matthew Perry, funny movie, and Selma is amazing in it. And it's kind of Trisha's and I's story. It's just backwards. She's the Latina with the huge family, and he's the white guy who's by himself. He doesn't have any brothers or sisters. It's just reversed. Trisha has
no brothers or sisters.
Yeah, no brothers or sisters. And then myself, who's got the huge family. And there's the scene where she takes him to a family dinner, and he's like, he's expecting mom, dad, maybe a brother. And he walks in, and it's like...
It's the wedding scene from The Godfather. Exactly. There's 900 people.
And I remember the same thing when I first took Trisha back home to Texas. It was like, boom, and we come to dinner, and my whole family's there, and she was like, oh, my God, is there a party going
on
at your mom's house?
Yeah, there's people crashing here.
And there's a scene where he's in Vegas, and she has the mom send him some Grape Papayas hot dogs, because he's just always talking about how he loves the Grape Papayas. And so I went there, and I took a picture, and I put it up on Facebook, and Trisha knew exactly why I was there, and it was cool.
So. Yay.
You don't care.
I do care.
Anyways, let's get to some news because there's lots of news, and then we've got to get to at least 5 or 6 picks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying 10. Can we do 10?
I think we can do the whole thing if we discipline ourselves.
Survey says, wrong. Here we go. NFL news.
Woke up yesterday to 2 large news items. We woke up to the news that the New Orleans Saints bounty punishments had finally come down.
Yes.
For only 4 players of the 22 to 27 possible guys to be in trouble. Only 4 were punished, but boy, were they punished.
Yeah, and then we woke up, just about an hour later after that, the news that great Charger linebacker, 20-year veteran of the NFL, Junior Seau, was found dead in his home. It was pretty sad. Police say it was a possible suicide. They haven't confirmed that yet, but that's what it's looking like. It's tough to just hear anybody dying from the league, but someone so young, 43. And it kind of hit me a little hard because, you know what, Jeff? He was born the same year I was born.
Mm-hmm.
He's 5 months older than I was, basically. And the first person I called was Trisha, and she's like, yeah, I just heard. And it's sad. It's sad. And then to find out after doing some reading is the 8th Charger of the 1994
Super Bowl team.
To pass away before the age of 45.
Uh-huh.
It's very tragic, and the fact that Junior felt that he had to take his own life makes it all.
I think he had changed a lot, Stephen. I think he had changed a lot. He tried to retire, if you recall, after his time with the Miami Dolphins when he was injured. He had tried briefly to retire.
Yeah.
And he couldn't stay away from the game. Bill Belichick got in touch with him and said, dude, we could really use you and your leadership and your enthusiasm and your love for the game. So Bill brought him up to New England for the last 2 years of his career. And the fact that anybody plays 20 years in this game just blows my mind. I mean, when the average playing career, as all of our listeners know, is 3.3 years, and you play for 20, and you play not punter, not kicker, you play at one of the most violent positions of linebacker in the league, and you don't just play it, you play it at the highest level. You play it at not only 12 Pro Bowl levels, but you will be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Yeah. And then you play 20 seasons doing this insane flying around the football, instinctive tackling, and as I told Mike Graham last night, he says, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right. Seau, I said, yes, you're pronouncing it right. Because as you will always remember, when Junior Seau hits you, you say, ow. He hits with a ferocity that little have seen. And what Ray Lewis does in his big showboating pregame, coming out of the tunnel with the fire and bringing hellfire to the game, Junior Seau invented that, if you ask me. And he's such a nice, kind, likable guy. Nobody, not even his ex-wife, has anything bad to say about him. But something happened in the last few years.
Yeah. Here's what I am horrified at the media for. An hour after we find that, you know, it is in fact him and it's been confirmed, some media folk, and I was very upset, so I can't even tell you who it was, for what network or what have you, puts a microphone in front of his mom's.
I saw that.
Face and asks her about
how do you
son.
Feel about your son's probable suicide,
and I think that
she's
that,
still in the throes of complete denial that he's gone.
I don't even know. That
Stephen will
I
never be
no
journalist because we can't do that.
No, you. I have no words.
I turn off my microphone.
I have no words.
And all I go is up to the family and say, I'm sorry. And then I get out of there.
Right. Yeah. it's there's a line.
I can film it from a distance.
Those reporters crossed it.
This woman who basically is saying, screaming, sweet Jesus, take me. Yeah. Not him. Not him. We all don't need to see that. There's a voyeuristic line that gets crossed in journalism sometimes that's completely inappropriate, and it lowers the humanity of all of us.
Yeah. It was tough. It was tough to see.
This is a man.
But our thoughts and well wishes go out to his family. He leaves some children behind, his ex-wife, his mom. I can't even begin to give them all of my sympathies. And we actually have a listener. I won't say her name, probably just to keep her, but to let her know that we're thinking about her in the time of she just lost her mom.
Yeah.
And we're thinking about you. You know who
Love you
are. And we're very sorry. You know, Jeff and I both had, you know, through the course of doing this podcast, had a parent die. So
unexpectedly, which is just crazy. Now, let me say, Junior was possibly one of the first five athletes I'd ever met in my life. And it was around 93, 94. And Junior had this idea with a buddy of his that they were going to start pretty much a motivational magazine for young people. It was called American Teen, and I had gotten tapped to write an advice column for it. So we had collaborated on this venture of launching this new magazine that was, I think it was going to be free, and it was going to be given to the schools and stuff, all part of the Junior Seau Foundation.
Right.
And he was going to, so we were there for the cover shoot where they shot his picture and stuff like that for the cover. And then the launch party in San Diego, and got to know him some. And my first and most overwhelming impression of Junior, and it feels horrible just to think about, but when I first shook his hand, mind you, I'm an extremely large man. I was not as large back then, round wise, but just as tall. My hand disappeared in his hand. His hands were gigantic. He could probably palm two footballs if he wanted to. And then his gentle spirit. Such an incredibly kind, generous man who could hit you so hard that by the time you stop rolling, your clothes be out of style. But that he could be so gentle off the field and such a loving and caring person. I heard a story yesterday that he actually had his own private physicians because he didn't want any teammates to see him getting worked on in the locker room. He wanted them to always see him up. He didn't want them to know ever that he was hurting. So he had his own doctors come to his house afterwards or his hotel so that they would only see him up. Because he wanted to be that guy that everybody could count on. Well, unfortunately, he slipped severely, obviously, into depression. He had an altercation in 2010 whereby he was, there was a 911 call about domestic assault from his girlfriend because he had gotten so agitated and then later on that night had driven his car off a 100-foot cliff. Many of us worried that it was suicide at the time. He reassured everybody that he had just fallen asleep at the wheel. It never set well with many of us, but we had to take him at his word.
Right.
Because we had never seen anything different to tell us otherwise. Well, now we're going to go back and revisit those things and think about those things and realize that this man was probably slipping deeper and deeper into depression and into losing control of his mind. Yeah. Because of the repetitive concussions.
That's the thing, you know, is the thing is, you know, when someone takes their own life, we just don't know. And that's the thing is we'll always have questions, but those questions will never be answered because we have absolutely no idea what was going through their mind.
Nope.
We have absolutely no idea their troubles. A brother of mine said, how do they do it? They got millions of dollars. They're famous. They got it all.
What if people can learn that money don't mean
squat? I told him, bro, we don't know what he was thinking. We don't know. And we're not going to know. We don't
no
know.
Amount of money makes you happy.
We don't know what was going through his mind. I was like, trust me, you can have all the money in the world, and that doesn't mean.
He had great kids. He had an ex-wife that still liked him.
It doesn't mean you're not going to get depressed for whatever reason.
Well, and especially if you've had multiple concussions and multiple traumas to the brain.
And that's the other thing. We don't even know how many concussions Junior Seau might have played.
On the injury report, he never had a concussion in 20 years of playing linebacker and delivering some of the most devastating blows. Yet I read this morning one of his neighbors is a former MLSer, and he once said to Junior, "I got a concussion the other night. I just can't believe how much my head hurts." And Junior told him, "Yeah, that happened to me a lot."
Yeah.
So never on the injury report, but we know that he had many concussions. You can't not.
And here's the other thing. The association with concussions and violent hits to the head and
degenerative effects on the brain.
Exactly. We don't know if people start hallucinating. We don't know if people start seeing things. Because the brain, when it's damaged, does some pretty weird stuff.
Yep.
And that's just the facts. So when someone says, "Yeah, I don't know how they could take their own life." Well, you don't know.
No, you don't know. The first part, you should have stopped there. Don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Let me say this. This was one of the things I just, for some reason, needed to get off my chest. Okay. It was weird when I first met him. So, 93, whatever. I was...
He had big hands.
20...
You were young.
Yeah, I was 25. I think I was 25. If that. I was about 25. So, Junior had just been in the league a couple of years. Made the Pro Bowl his first rookie season. It's the number 5 pick by the San Diego Chargers. Oceanside kid, always been local boy, done good. I was very irritated last night by local media saying Southland tragedy. Southland, you got to realize the jargon here in Southern California. Southland means Los Angeles and Orange County.
Yeah.
Everything south of Orange County is Mexico, and people in Los Angeles area don't even know that San Diego exists.
Wait a minute, hold on. So south of Orange County isn't Mexico?
You hit San Clemente, and then
it's Mexico, right?
70 miles of land that includes the 7th most populous city in America, San Diego. San Diego.
I thought San Diego was in Mexico.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding to all my friends that live in San Diego.
Yeah.
It's a joke.
No, and you know what? They're happy that you think that because they want you to think that because it's a secret.
They don't want anybody to visit.
They don't want anyone to live there. Yes. Come to SeaWorld and then get out, okay? Because honestly, they think it's the best kept secret in the world.
We go down there for Legoland.
It's beautiful. The place is spectacularly beautiful. And he belonged to San Diego. He did not belong to the Southland. They wanted to make it a local story. It's not a local story. It's a San Diego story. There's a huge difference between LA and San Diego. They might as well be in different states.
Well, the Chargers
The
Chargers might be LA. They're anticipating Los Angeles Chargers.
And trust me, Junior will still belong to San Diego.
Yeah.
So as I met him and as I shook his hand for the first time and lost my hand inside there, I wanted compulsively to call him Mr. Seau. Then I realized that he was 3 years younger than me.
Yeah.
4 years younger than me. How many years younger than me are you?
Four.
4 years younger than me. And for me to say it like 25, I'll be 37 in a few months.
Yeah, right.
I'm 47 in a few months.
I was like 37?
You can't even get the decade right when you're my age, okay?
Okay.
It's impossible. You're so freaking old.
Oh, man. Dude, you are way older than me.
Okay. So I wanted to say compulsively Mr. Seau. Because he's this huge, larger-than-life guy that's already made the Pro Bowl. Yeah. And I admired him to death. Remember, the Rams had already left and stuff. And I wanted to say Mr. Seau, but I'm like, I'm older than him. This is one of those moments that everyone goes through in life when you realize that some of the athletes you admire are now younger than you.
Yes.
And it's very disturbing.
It is. And here's the thing. The other thing, though, is you don't want to call someone that big junior. Because Junior's always like, you know, like the younger, the smaller dude.
I don't know what made his Samoan parents name him Junior. Maybe it means something like gigantic in Samoan. We can only hope.
Rest in peace, Junior Seau.
Prayers for his families.
Prayers and sympathies out.
And for all the Charger community, because honestly, there's few people that have touched this league like Junior Seau.
All right, let's get to
the bounties.
New Orleans Saints and the bounty scandal and the four players. And the big news is the suspension of Jonathan Vilma a whole season. 16 games.
What?
You are suspended for 16 games.
Without pay.
No passing go. Do not collect $200. $7
million. Do not collect seven. You're going to tell. Now, again, just to educate people about the filthy rich, $7 million is a lot of money when you're used to making it and you don't get it.
Exactly.
Your agent's a little peeved. Because he'd still like his, whatever that equals out to, $210,000 that he doesn't get.
Yeah.
He's a little peeved.
Yeah.
Everyone sets up their lives around how much money they got. And everybody who's got money just needs a little bit more. Okay?
Oh, well.
So these people don't got, so you should feel for them. Not just because, I don't care because he's already rich. He planned on having $7 million this year.
The other saint is defensive end Will Smith, who will miss four games without pay. Now, there were two other players no longer with the Saints.
Scott Fujita of the Cleveland Browns. Fujita. And this just, Steven, for me, this Browns team is trying so hard to get their lives back together and get on
Fujita
track.
Fujita is suspended for three games without pay, and the final defensive lineman.
Vikings.
Packers. Anthony Hargrove, now with the Packers, half a season, eight games for him. Apparently these guys were the big instigators in the whole pay for play kind of bounty they had going on.
Steven, I got a little issue here.
And there's an issue.
There's an issue. When your ultimate defense is you can't prove that I did that or that I said that or that I meant that. That's a really weak case, guys. What we need to see is a denial that you did that, and then I am suing you for wrongful employment intervention here. I'm suing you.
Because
I'm also suing you for breach of what is it when you slander someone? For slander.
Slander? Isn't it liable?
Fine.
I'm
suing you for libel and slander and defamation of character. But no, you can't prove it. Your evidence is weak I ever said this.
All four players are
expected. No one denies it.
To appeal their suspension.
Because there's not enough evidence.
The NFL Players Association Executive Director DeMaurice Smith is meeting with those Saints players today.
Telling them, guys, just shut up and serve your suspension because you are a black eye on the league.
Stop saying it can't
There's
be
not
proven.
Enough evidence.
There's not enough evidence.
65% of the 200,000 Americans polled believe the league more than just got it right.
Yeah.
Got a B or an A on this, according to ESPN Sports Nation. And I voted. I gave the league a B for its handling of this.
Okay.
I think it should have come down before the draft. That's what kept me from giving them an A on this. But so that the teams could have made better adjustments and knowing whom their personnel was going to be going forward. But I was very pleased to see 65% of Americans believe that, they handled this well.
All right, well, NFLPA Association released a statement. Executive Director D. Smith said, after seeing the NFL's decision letters, the NFLPA has still not received any detailed or specific evidence from the league of these specific players' involvement in the alleged pay-to-injure program. We have made it clear that punishment without evidence is not fair. We have spoken with our players and their representatives, and we will vigorously protect and pursue all options on their behalf.
Now, where in there was there a denial?
No, there was no denial.
Okay, you guys wrong on the job, and they don't have videotape of you going, here's my $10,000 to KO Kurt Warner and Brett Favre.
We don't have that on video, so it didn't happen? I think this is the problem with this statement, is that you're just basically saying, we've got no evidence from the league. They've shown us nothing. They've told us nothing, and so we don't think it's fair.
You know what they've shown and told is that we know this happened.
Yeah.
Because that's all they got. They've shown you everything they have.
And they've probably got plenty of players and coaches on record saying.
They do.
Yeah, it happened.
And what do they have? They have Greg Williams saying, I started this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did this thing. Yeah, this is what happened eventually. And remember, here's the kicker in this whole thing. The lesson to be learned here, boys and girls, is that the cover-up is worse than the crime, always.
Right.
But y'all said nothing like this was going on until they decided to say, yeah, it did, and yeah, you're in trouble. Well, you can't prove it.
Yeah.
So you don't. You first lie, and then you say there's not enough evidence.
And the whole it happens everywhere. The yeah. Other by teams the way, just don't get caught.
It goes on everywhere except for the talk about the slamming his head as many times. Except for that, that speech in the locker room that got recorded. That goes on in every freaking locker room. Yeah, no. I tell you, I've heard things that have disturbed me in locker rooms. And then the normal person says, what about the targeting his left ACL? Well, obviously not that. Well, that's the problem we all have.
This just in from Redskins.
This just in?
Yes.
It really does deserve that?
Well, here's the deal.
Does it or doesn't deserve it? Well, so this just in, that sounds like breaking news. Sad.
It's not sad. It was going to be a joke until you decided to go and make it all big and huge.
Okay,
kid, let's just...
Don't be silly, Adrian Peterson.
All right, can I just make a joke here and have a little fun?
Sure. This just in.
This just in, Jeff. Redskins fans and Dan Snyder and the Redskins organization are making a plea to the league to also have Drew Brees suspended for week one. Saints play the Redskins week one.
There you go.
All right.
Drew Brees still not in contract.
Not in contract.
And
so
not in camp.
Maybe the Redskins don't have to play Drew Brees in the Saints week one.
They better get that handled. Who that said they're going to beat them Saints? Lots of teams next year.
And here's the thing, Jeff. You can probably be okay without a Vilma or a Smith for a few games here and there. Well, Vilma, obviously, for the entire season.
Right.
You're not going to be okay without Sean Payton for the entire season.
No, we saw how well that went when he got injured. It did not go well.
Plus the thing that every team is going to be gunning for you next year, it's going to be very difficult for the Saints to win a lot of football games. That goes without saying. Now, here's the other thing.
So who's the guy they got for Vilma, Steven, that they brought in that was so – he's so terrific.
Jonathan Vilma?
Yeah, they got a free agency. Yeah. They got a guy at free agency. I can't remember his name right now off the top of my head. Okay. But honestly, there's part of me that believes that they would be okay if he never came back. Because – he may lose his job as a result of this because he's making $7 million at linebacker. And, yeah, he's good. He's the captain. But we got somebody in free agency that's younger and therefore cheaper. And that might work out really well for us.
I see what you're saying.
And so some of these guys, the repercussions may go on for a long time. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for the Saints. It's going to be tough. And here's what I'd like to say about the bounty and the punishments. And both times when it came to doling out punishments for the coaches in the organization and when it came out for doling out punishments to the players, I thought I was very harsh.
Curtis Lofton.
Okay. I thought I was very harsh in the punishments that I thought I would give out if I were the commissioner. And both times, the commissioner has come out and said, "Bow!" and outdid the punishments that I doled out. Okay, I thought I was being super harsh with my punishments.
What did I say, Steven, to everybody? What did I say to everybody? It'll be way worse than anybody can imagine.
I was being bad. I mean, I'm like, people were looking at me like, dude, you're being harsh. And the commissioner blew mine out of the water.
I was being harsher than you, and he doubled what I thought.
So
now this is why there's a lot of fans out there screaming Roger Goodell's an SOB and he runs a tyrannical organization. And when the appeals process runs through the tyrant and this mean jerky figurehead, it's not a fair process.
You know how mean and jerky he is. Commissioner Goodell comes down Radio City Music Hall, comes into our section.
And walks by us, and he basically gives me a head nod.
Yeah, and Jeff, instead of like saying hello or whatever,
good evening, Mr. Commissioner. Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, just anything, just saying anything.
Sup, Rog?
Jeff looks at him with And I was like, what the fuck did you just say?
What did you just say?
Oh, sorry. Oops. What the heck did you just say? Jeff literally did a...
I got tongue-tied for one of the two times in my life. This was the fourth time I've had the fortune of meeting the commissioner.
It's just a commish, man.
I know, but...
He puts on his suit the same way we put on our suits.
I saw him put on his suit once. That was funny. But the thing is, I really... I respect him so much. Thanks. That's a quote, actually, from my last encounter with the commissioner. All three prior to that had gone really well. So,
love it.
Oh, man, that was bad. And he was actually, for the first time in my life, acknowledging me. I don't know your name, but hi, because I remember you.
Right.
But that's what freaked me out. It caught me off guard. I saw him coming our way.
Yeah.
And so I was all cool. I was all prepared. But when he did the nod of recognition.
Right.
Like, hey, dude, I know you. Yeah. Good to see you.
Yeah.
That's when I lost it. I'm like, I wasn't ready for him to have known me. Yes. I was ready for me to make another good impression.
Right. And then it was like,
And instead I made a bad impression.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know who that was. He didn't have anything to say.
So all the booing that went on at the draft, as I segue us gently to the draft, we said we had Saints, Seo, and
Sizzle. We haven't talked about Sizzle yet.
There was the three S's today that we had to get to before the draft at 36 minutes into the show.
Hey, we're good. We're going to get to 10 of them. I guarantee.
All right. I just was hoping for more. But, T-Sizzle.
Hoping for more. On Facebook, you said we'd be lucky if we did three.
That's being sarcasm, as Jordan once said when he was little.
You're being sarcasm?
When he was little.
I'm being sarcasm.
I was being sarcasm. Love kids.
That's, oh, my God. Emma, I can't. You know
Emma,
what?
You just say Emma, and my mind goes in 100 directions, and none of them are good, but none of them are bad. They're just fun and
Emma,
trouble.
Emma, okay, so you saw the video I posted on Facebook of us the last time it rained really hard. We were racing popsicle sticks down the street.
Popsicle sticks.
Yes. Right. So it's been kind of drizzling yesterday, right? It was drizzling.
Kind of. For two freaking days, we became Seattle.
But it's not rain. Like, it's not accumulating.
For two freaking days, we became Seattle. Okay.
So here's the deal. So it's got this drizzle that's coming out over the last 2 days. And the water doesn't accumulate. So all she wants to do is she keeps like...
Race
popsicle sticks. Popsicle sticks. I'm like, baby, there's no
there's
water.
Not enough.
There's no water.
It's been raining for 2 days. What do you mean there's not enough?
Exactly. So we go and we drop off Elena at school. We come back home yesterday. And she walks out to the side to the curb. And she looks down and she's like, Daddy, I told you you're a big liar.
I told you you're a big liar? What kid said 4.5 says, Daddy, I told you you're a big liar?
Look at the water. And I walk up there.
There's a tiny bit of water
puddle
on the curb.
There's this little puddle in
so
the corner.
So he probably spilled their coffee.
And I'm like, okay, first of all, kid, take a deep breath.
Daddy's not a big liar.
Daddy's not a big liar. I'm not
lying. He lies sometimes, but not very often.
Okay? So that's not a good thing to be yelling
out
to.
He lies if he thinks he's going to get trouble. Not in situations like this.
Don't be yelling to the entire neighborhood that your daddy's a big liar.
Okay? It's bad. Social services might get called.
So do you see this little itty-bitty puddle of water, sweetheart? The popsicle sticks aren't going to go anywhere. They're not going to move. Oh. Okay. And then she just walks in like nothing.
Case closed.
Oh, that kid is too much.
Case closed.
All right. T-Sizzle. A final piece of news. Terrell Suggs, Baltimore Ravens, they are in trouble. He has, was it torn?
Yes.
What gurgles. Was
Sorry
that,
about the gurgles.
Jeffrey?
Sorry about the gurgles. Morning gurgles.
Terrell Suggs is going to be missing a significant amount of time, if not the entire season.
Seems probable
he
the entire.
He tore his Achilles
just
during
ACL.
Some off-season workouts. Now, it had been reported that some people said that he was playing basketball and he torn his Achilles, but it's not. He was actually working
out. Oh, it's not
working
his ACL. It's his Achilles tendon. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
you're
that's
right.
What I'm saying.
You're right.
It's Achilles.
I misunderstood.
It's a huge blow to the Ravens. I mean, T. Suggs, he was like, 14 sacks last year.
But he was injured a lot last year.
Fumbled, but he didn't miss half the season.
No,
he missed like a game.
The whole season. But he was
You're thinking Ray Lewis.
Oh, you're right.
Ray Lewis missed a lot of games last year. T. Sizzle was on the field, I think, for all game. He missed one.
So, according to ESPN.com news services, Ravens linebacker Terrell Suggs told ESPN. So he told ESPN on Thursday he partially tore his Achilles running a conditioning drill in Arizona, but believes he can return for the 2012 season. What if that conditioning drill was full court basketball? Couldn't you call that a conditioning drill, conditioning activity? I'm getting my cardio the in
Ravens,
shape.
The Ravens are reporting off-season
workouts.
That sounds
really dicey. I'm sorry. That sounds really dicey.
If the team is covering for you, then...
The team's job is to cover for you while they look with the other hand.
No.
They affirm with one hand.
Not when it's you're getting injured on their dime when it's something they haven't approved.
He was working out at his old high school in Chandler, Arizona. He said he started and stopped and felt some. Started and stopped. Do you do that much playing basketball?
There you go.
So he called his trainer to get a doctor's exam. In an earlier text to ESPN, he said the injury happened on Saturday.
Here's the thing. If Ray Lewis continues to play next year, we're having to miss games due to injury, and they don't got T. Sizzle. He says he can come back by October.
Regular recovery time is 11 months.
Yeah, he's not coming back by October. I'm telling you that right now. That's what he says, and that's what he's gone on record of saying. He's like, I can be back by October.
Normal humans, full activity, 4 to 6 months.
Yeah,
for going to a desk job.
Yeah, you're not coming back in October. I'm sorry.
And he's going to be 30 in October. That's unfortunate. It really is.
Last year's Defensive Player of the Year. How much trouble are the Baltimore Ravens in?
I don't know. I think that they did well for themselves in the draft like they always do.
They're in trouble.
Yeah.
They're in trouble.
Yeah. Mostly from
their
a leadership.
Their football
from a leadership.
Team is about their defense. Their defense.
Yeah.
Carries that football team. The attitude of that football team comes from the defensive side of the ball. And where does it come from?
Defense wins championships.
So,
defense.
It comes from
what we're trying to do and where we're trying to go. We dominate today.
It comes from Ray Lewis and it comes from Terrell Suggs, and that is where the defense gets its attitude from. Mm-hmm. And then that gets transferred onto the offense, on the special teams, and everybody else
shorter
in that football
field,
organization.
You don't have to do as much. You don't have to worry about possibly going three and out because your defense will get you the ball right back. And it makes it easier on a Joe Flacco, who's not a top five quarterback.
Oh, he is, though. He's elite.
Okay. I'm elite, too.
So if this defense can't perform and keep the Ravens in football games like it did early last season, let's say Suggs does somehow magically come back mid-October, you're missing the first 7-8 games.
And, dude, by the way, you play in one of the most difficult divisions in the NFL.
Oh, and which, by the way, let's get to this draft. Every single team in that division
got better.
Has an awesome draft. I mean, they were awesome. Somebody asked me on Saturday, who do you think's had the best draft? I said, the AFC North. And it was like, well, which team?
The AFC North.
Everybody.
The law of them.
The Steelers, the Ravens, the Bengals, and even the Browns. Yes, I know some people don't like
Trent
the Browns.
Richardson, what are you, freaking
I like
crazy?
What the Browns did, okay?
Now, they may have gotten worked a little bit by the Ziggy Wilfs of life, but...
And that brings us... to the 2012 NFL Draft.
We really nailed that simultaneously.
That was in stereo.
That was simultaneous.
In stereo.
It's actually in mono, but...
Let's start. Everybody knew who number one and number two was going to be. There was no question.
No drama.
Andrew Luck, Stanford, goes to the Colts. Robert Griffin III, Baylor, goes to the Redskins in a trade that was done a week before the draft where they moved up to number two and gave the number six pick to the Rams. Now,
the Vikings have traded out of the three spot with the Cleveland Browns.
But before that, this is what we're hearing. Vikings are going to trade with the Bucks. Vikings are looking to move down.
The Jets.
The Jets are very interested in Richardson. They're going to move all the way up. And the next thing you know is we hear just that. The Cleveland Browns
have traded with the Minnesota Vikings for the third pick.
And
the Browns are now on the clock.
Goes crazy. That was a pretty crazy room to begin with.
And this was, now this was, mind you, probably 30 minutes before the draft even started. Now, remember, they hadn't even announced the number one and the number two.
That's right.
This was 30 minutes before the draft
starts.
That's
right.
So everybody's already signed. And people look at me and I'm like, they got to be crazy. Why are you going to move up one spot?
Steven was a little agitated, to put it kindly.
I was. People were trying to calm me down.
You're moving up one freaking spot.
For what?
Everybody knows that Matt Khalil is the guy that the Vikings want. And if you go from 3 to 4, you still get Matt Khalil.
And you get
a bunch of junk.
And the thing is, oh, the Minnesota Vikings have someone named Adrian Peterson. Don't be silly, Adrian Peterson. They're not going to go and get Trent Richardson. Stay where you are, Cleveland. Keep your picks. Now, mind you, I didn't know at the time the Cleveland Browns had 13 picks, the most of any team in the league for the draft. And so they could give away a couple of those older ones. But I'm like, don't do it. Stay where you are. The Vikings are bluffing. They're pulling. What did the dude say on the TV? They're pulling a banana in the tailpipe.
But in a banana in the tailpipe.
For the banana in the tailpipe trick.
Don't fall for that.
They're telling you that somebody wants to move up to take Trent Richardson. It's a bunch of bucks.
They're working
Stay
you.
Stay still.
They're working you.
Cleveland said.
They worked him.
We're going to get work. We're going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe.
We are going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe.
And they did fall for it. They move up. Look, they still get their guy. It's Trent Richardson. But you know what? You know who came out smelling clean? The Minnesota Vikings, who at 4 took Matt Khalil, the offensive tackle from USC.
You mean the guy they wanted? The guy they wanted? Oh, they got the guy they wanted.
And they only got a few more picks out of it, you know.
What did you do, basically? You got picks. You got to take
picks,
exactly who you wanted,
you
got more picks, which is good.
Now, here's where it gets interesting.
Yeah.
The Browns take Trent Richardson, which I think is a great pick. They needed a home run hitter. They needed someone who was going to take their team from scoring 13.7 points per game to scoring at least 21, okay? Because you're not going to win in the National Football League if you only score 13.7 points. If you can't put 2 touchdowns up in a game, you're in trouble. And that's where the Browns were. So they got a home run hitter in Trent Richardson. The Vikings are happy. They got some protection for their offensive line. And big, huge 6'6", runs the 40 in a 4.87 lightning fast for a big old 300-pound offensive lineman, Matt Khalil. And then the Bucks are on the board.
I wanted to go back to the Cleveland and Minnesota thing. Because really, Peter King put it so well.
Okay.
Peter was there for Thursday's part of the draft. And in his Monday morning quarterback column, he wrote this, which I thought was fantastic. Remember the famous NFL Films clip when Bill Parcells is exhorting his Giants team back in the 80s by saying, there's a reason you lift all them weights. And in this draft, there's a reason Cleveland built up all those draft choices entering this draft, a league high 13. I've been hearing GM Rick Spielman of the Vikings took advantage of a Browns team that didn't want to risk losing Trent Richardson, which is true. I've been hearing Browns GM Tom Heckert got snookered into throwing 4th, 6th, and 7th round picks. That's a load of crap. This is the easiest Monday morning quarterbacking to do. Hey, that's my show. After the draft, there's no way Heckert could know what real offer Spielman had on the table. Spielman, as it turned out, had talked to Tampa Bay about the pick, but the Bucs were never seriously interested in it. But Heckert had no way of knowing at the time. General managers making vital decisions for a long term cannot sit there and say, I wonder if Spielman really has something or if he's bluffing. They have to make decisions on the fly. The Browns kept the top 5 pick of a vital draft intact, got the guy they wanted, Trent Richardson, and still had 10 picks to work with. I don't castigate Heckert. I applaud him.
Well, good for you, but bottom line, he fell for a banana in the tailpipe. Okay.
For those who are not in the know, go YouTube, banana in the tailpipe,
Eddie Murphy, Beverly Hills Cop.
Banana in the tailpipe. And it's a classic scene.
I'm telling you that Peter King applauds him, and that's good, but he fell for the
He's
banana.
He's saying, though, you couldn't. He agreed.
You, yeah.
But you, he's you saying you couldn't say, know.
You couldn't know.
You couldn't know.
Very well.
We're not going
to Let's go
him.
To five. The Buccaneers are on the clock, and then Kamish comes up. He's like, the Buccaneers have traded their pick. The Jacksonville Jaguars are now on the clock. And immediately after that. That's right. The Buccaneers trade from five down to seven, and the Jags move up. And I'm like, now why in the world are the Bucs doing that? So the Jaguars go wide receiver Justin Blackmon, Oklahoma State. Boom! They got themselves someone to play opposite Vincent Jackson. All of a sudden, their offense now looking pretty good.
Who's going
to
throw them the ball? Oh, Blaine Gabbert.
It don't matter. Okay. They got some pretty fly
guys.
They
have great receivers.
Okay.
With great hands. All he needs is somebody to get him the ball. Right.
Immediately after the Justin Blackmon pick is announced, commissioner comes on. The St. Louis Rams have traded their pick. The Dallas Cowboys are now on the clock. And what? Jeffrey, out loud, yells out, as loud as Jeffrey could possibly be, holy S-H-I-T. And I look at him like, dude, that was a little loud. And literally five or six reporters around in the area all look at him like, really?
None of us saw this coming, though.
Nobody saw this coming. Anybody talking about the Cowboys, they were going to move down from 14, maybe down to get somebody else. But no one ever thought they were going to move up into the top 10.
I did yell, holy S, and it was louder than it should have been. But that's, you know, Steven, that's how I roll. That's how in tune I am with the NFL. I know when something is a holy S kind of moment.
Right, right.
And when something's a, huh.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, here's the thing. The Bucs wanted safety Mark Barron at seven. They thought they'd get him at seven. Well, now the Cowboys jumped up ahead of them one spot.
Well, the Cowboys were expected to possibly get
Mark
Barron.
Take Mark Barron, the safety. And so now the Bucs are like, OMG. We moved back two spots with Jacksonville thinking we'd still be able to get our guy.
And we may have just gotten burned.
And now the Cowboys just snaked us one pick earlier.
It was high drama.
It was. Now, mind you, okay, this is pick number six for Dallas, and there had already been four trades.
Yeah.
Four trades in the top six picks. We had the Rams trading with the Redskins. We had
the Vikings trading
with the Browns. We had the Jags trading with the Bucks,
and
we had
the Dallas Browns trading with the Vikings. Also, technically,
again,
that still counts.
Right. And we had the Cowboys trading with the Rams.
Redskins through the Rams.
Yeah. No, they traded with the Rams.
But that was the Redskins' original pick.
Right. And so, yeah, I hate how the NFL puts it. I don't know if that's the list you're looking at what list you're looking at.
I just got off
the
top.
But they say
head.
From Redskins through Rams, it's a little
weird.
Well,
it originally was. That's how the Redskins got Robert Griffin III.
Right.
They moved up took the Rams spot.
I know that's the Redskins' original spot, but at this point,
it wasn't
from the Redskins anymore. It was from the Rams.
Correct.
I mean, it was the Rams.
Correct.
It was Rams pick. So the Cowboys, they moved up, and they take who they had on their board as the highest defensive player on their draft board, the highest cornerback they had on their draft board since, they say, Deion Sanders, and they take LSU's cornerback, Morris Claiborne.
Isn't that the kid who got it? 3.5 on his Wonderlic score?
It don't matter. The dude is fast. He picks off passes, and he's a legitimate cover corner, which is what the Cowboys. Now, look, they go and they get Brandon Carr from the Kansas City Chiefs. Now they got Morris Claiborne, and they still got Mike Jenkins. Remember, they let go of Terrence Newman. Goodbye, see you later. Don't let the whole world hit you. But you now got three legitimate top corners.
You went from your biggest need to possibly your biggest strength. That is a remarkable turnaround. Now, we've got to hope that these guys don't turn into the Eagles next year, which is like just because you got the talent doesn't mean it's going to work on
the
field.
Thing.
And they've got a great coach.
What Rob Ryan lacked last season is he lacked a cornerback where he could say, I am putting you on the island.
You are single coverage. You're getting no help over the top.
You are out there by yourself. Don't get burned. That's all I'm asking you. I'm asking you to cover
for three seconds. Keep the play in front of you.
3 seconds. That's all I need because we're going to smack somebody in 3 seconds. Okay?
The quarterback's dead.
He never had that last year.
No, he didn't.
He has that now. So no more excuses.
Yeah, guys just got beat right and left. It's like not only did they not keep the play in front of them, the play got behind them.
So, number seven, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers now breathe a sigh of relief. Oh, thank you very much, Dallas. I'm glad you're happy with Claiborne. But now we're gonna take
Alabama our guy, Mark Barron.
And now everybody from seven on up is happy. They got their guy.
Yeah.
Colts got their guy, although I think it's the wrong one. Redskins got their guy, although they got lucky into that one.
No, they didn't get lucky. They got Griffin.
That's right. They got lucky into that one. They got lucky into that one.
I was playing along with your wordplay.
The Browns, even though they fall for the banana, the tailpipe, they get their guy.
Because
they
got the home hitter. Top 15 fantasy pick, okay?
Minnesota Vikings, they get the guy they wanted all along. They just wanted to move down from three, and they've been adamant about it.
They just wanted to pick up a fourth, fifth, and seventh. What's so bad about that?
And they got it, and that was very nice. The Jaguars move up. They get the wide receiver to pair up opposite Vincent Jackson.
To be thrown to by... whom?
Yeah, Blaine Gabbert. The Cowboys move all the way up. It cost them a second rounder, but in the end,
BFD.
I think they needed the guy that they wanted, cornerback from LSU. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, even though they come down two spots, they get the safety they wanted, Mark Barron. And for the first seven picks, everybody is happy. The room is abuzz. Everything's loud. And then the Miami Dolphins come up and say, Ryan Tannehill.
Wait, say it again.
The Miami Dolphins come up and they say, Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, yeah, we knew that's
what you were going to do. We were hoping.
But is it right?
We were hoping that there'd be a moment of lucidity there in the beautiful Miami area and that common sense might prevail and that we know that you were not very interested in Matt Flynn. We understand that for some reason you were not very interested in Matt Flynn. Yeah. And for some reason you were not very interested.
You lost in the Peyton Manning sweepstakes.
Well, you were interested in Peyton Manning, but you couldn't offer him enough, even though he has a house right there. So you guys keep settling.
Yes.
And they insist Tannehill is our boy.
Well, wait a minute, Jim. Here's
He's the guy we wanted more than anything.
They had more.
If we could have had Andrew
they
Luck,
brought in,
if we could have, we wouldn't have. We would have taken Tannehill.
They had David Garrard. They brought in David Garrard.
No, they've got a legitimate quarterback. Competition.
You have a couple quarterbacks that could keep you.
You got Matt Moore,
until next
David
year.
Garrard, and Ryan Tannehill. You had two quarterbacks that you hoped one of them would be serviceable, and you picked up with the first round of the pick, first round of the draft, you picked up another serviceable quarterback.
Now, look, I watch a lot of Texas football. You know that because I'm a Texas guy. So I know Texas A&M, all right? I like Ryan Tannehill. I don't like him at eight. I don't like him at eight.
22?
I don't like him at 10. I don't even like him at 15. 22?
I said 22. That was my number for Tannehill.
I'm
interested.
I'll take him at 20. I'll take him at 20.
33? Perfect. Perfect.
Absolutely.
In the top of the second round.
But 20,
perfect.
I'm taking him at 20.
Not in the. I don't even think he's a first round guy, Steven. I really don't.
I think he is a late first round guy. He's not at 8.
There was so many great, and what I loved about this draft, it was fortunate enough to say on radio a few times with Mike Graham, as we were the only people in the UK talking about the draft while it was happening.
Right.
Why is that? What the heck was ESPN America showing in the middle of the night that they couldn't show the draft?
Rugby?
What was it? The Pakistani cricket? What are you showing in the middle of the night?
You know, rugby does last a long time. It's the only sport.
No, you're thinking of cricket, I think.
Oh, that's right. It is cricket. I'm sorry.
Yeah, cricket can go for days.
Cricket is the only game I know that's longer than baseball.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it can go for 5 days.
Yeah, well, you have they're called test matches and things.
Yeah.
And they test your patience.
test your patience. David Tossel from NFL UK was there, and he had talked to me about it. He had gone to the Mets game the night before, and he was like, you know, I was very impressed. It was a rather quick game. It was only...
You know, most people go to baseball games and say, wow, how boring.
He said it was only 2 hours and 40 minutes. It was great. And
yeah,
I was
that's
like,
pretty
yeah,
average.
Well, I was like, that's a pretty good game. He's like, yeah, it was a lot of pitching. It was moved really good. He's like, you know, and I should know because I like cricket and those can last 8-9 days.
He went on vacation specifically to watch cricket for a 10-day test match.
Really?
And that was his vacation.
A 10-day test. So they play for 10 days.
Yeah. And mind you, cricket, now all the cricket.
Do they stop and sleep? Or
what
something?
You stop for is you. It's like a lifestyle, Steven.
Okay.
You stop for the things that people stop for. You start after breakfast.
Okay.
You stop for lunch.
Really?
Then you stop for tea.
Like it's a lunch break.
Yes.
We're having a lunch break.
Yes.
Okay, and then?
Forget the interval.
Tea time.
We're having lunch.
It's tea and crumpets.
And then it's tea time.
And you play again.
And then you play some more until dark.
And then there's dinner.
And then you pick it up the next day after breakfast. It's all right. No, because it's dark.
Okay.
It's dark.
So you just go
and you play till it's dark. And that's cricket.
Put some lights up.
Now, you can play. There's 20-20 cricket. There's different forms of cricket that are shorter.
Yes.
But test
match. Some wicked googly.
Yeah. So cricket can go for days. David had just come off of a vacation where he'd spent 10 days watching cricket.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, a 2-hour and 40-minute Mets game is rather short. And by the way, for everyone who wrote off my Angels, we're 10 and 15, and we are going to win the West. I guarantee it. Guarantee it.
Talk to me when you're at least 500. Can you do that for me?
Fine. 5 days from now.
Yeah, right.
Just
because Jared Weaver pitched a no-no last night, calm down.
We got 9 runs.
Calm down.
We're scoring lots of runs, and Pujols is batting .209.
Oh, okay, so what, the bats woke up finally?
The bats have been waking up, and they are now awake, and Pujols is still asleep.
Yes, can somebody wake up Pujols?
When he wakes up, we don't need him, but when he does, holy crap, you're all dead.
Okay,
enough said.
All right, so
Steven, just
we're at number 8.
You can't make oranges be peaches. It's exactly what it is, and it doesn't change, and it will never change.
Okay, I just needed to get that out there.
Okay.
I thought it'd bring us back on track.
Thank you for getting us back on track. Well, the number 9 pick goes to the Carolina Panthers. They were happy to stay right where
they are.
They
were sensible and said, you know what? Luke Kuechly, you're good.
We need some defense.
Yeah.
We're in a division with the Saints, the Falcons, the Bucs.
But there was some drama here. Because in the top 10, they took interior defense.
An inside linebacker.
Instead of all the defensive ends and the corners and the safeties that are all sexy, we went interior defense.
I think it's probably because Luke Kuechly was probably the best player on the
board. Fantastic. The guy, I suspect that they're going to, what did they run there? Do they run a 3-4 or 4-3? But I see him as just like this perfect Carolina, Ron Rivera, probably a 4-3.
No, I think Ron Rivera runs a 3-4. He came from the Chargers. He's a Chargers
Yeah, I know, guy. Which I was thinking that the Chargers wouldn't. But anyways, talk about it while I confirm.
Yeah, well, you know, they decided to go with, here's the deal. They couldn't go wrong with Luke only because they need defense. The guy, his combine was pretty much phenomenal. 38-inch vertical jump, fast on the cone drill, 20-yard shuttle. He ran a 4.1-second 20-yard shuttle and a 4.58 40-yard dash. Now, for a linebacker, that's pretty fast. That means, here's Jeff. Who do Panthers have to defend? Oh, your boyfriend. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, they got Kellen Winslow Jr. over the Bucks.
Yeah.
Oh, who else did they got? The Atlanta Falcons. What is their tight end?
Drums. Oh, their tight end.
Pretty boy.
Yeah,
Floyd.
Tony Gonzalez.
Tony Gonzalez. There you go.
Toco.
There's a whole bunch. And you got yourself a linebacker that is fast enough.
Keckley's the mic. They run a 4-3.
Yeah.
They do run a 4-3,
okay,
and he'll be the mic. And look, that's what you need. That's what you need. You need somebody that can completely blow up a quarterback or drop back in coverage and take away those crossing routes that are becoming oh so popular in the NFL.
And be fast enough to match up with some of these speedy tight ends.
The guy's a freak. The guy is seriously super freaky. And you know what I love? CBS already has updated their what do you call it when you put all the positions in there? When you put all the positions, the depth chart.
Oh.
They've got their depth chart in there, and there's
really?
Luke Kuechly right there now playing ahead of Philip Dillard, who was their former Mike linebacker. And I tell you, they're looking really good. James Anderson on the right.
All right, we're going to finish
John
up here.
And John Beeson on the left. Seriously, Steven, think about it. Their defense is looking really good.
I told you we would get through 10, so let's finish up with the Buffalo Bills, who they decided to stay on the defensive side of the ball. And if anything, the beginning of this draft was defense heavy.
Okay? Mm-hmm. And you know why? Like I was in the middle of saying, and then I probably interrupted myself. Because the rookie wage scale, which I wrote about the need for 3 years ago,
now we can draft the guys we most need and are most talented and will be with us for the longest instead of having to spend $15, $20, $25 million on some sexy player who we will never use because he'll wash out as a wide receiver. We can go and draft the best guy that we need, which is frequently defense.
Yeah.
And those guys stay on your team for a long time.
I have to say, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
We're talking
about Stephon Gilmore.
I know we are talking about Gilmore, but I got to go back up to the second pick.
I really
like Robert Griffin III. And what saddens me is I'll never be able to cheer for him ever again until he is traded away.
Yeah, maybe a second contract.
Well, we'll talk about later because the Redskins, you know, they decided to draft a quarterback here, and we'll talk about that at some other
point. I think
it
was smart, Steven. I don't think it was dumb of them at all.
I think it was stupid. They've done it before. It failed miserably on them because both quarterbacks hated each other, and they hated being on the same team like that.
Well, you
they
know, both funny thought they thing were happens starters. When you get to be teammates. Buffalo Bills taking Stephon Gilmore, outstanding choice. He will play right cornerback and line up alongside Terrence McGee on the other cornerback side. And give they did such a good job drafting.
I think the Bills on the AFC East, they decided
we're never going to outscore you, so we damn well better slow you down.
We need to slow you down somehow. And that was their pick of Gilmore there. Do we dare go Chiefs?
Just do 11 just for fun.
Chiefs. All right, they decided to go with defensive tackle Dontari Poe from Memphis. And it, you know, this is one of those picks where Jeffrey, I would say, not sexy, not super
sexy,
special, but
huge.
There's another team where they needed to bolster their defense. They gave up far too many points last year.
I believe they were second or third in the league against points given up, 27 or something points a game.
Yeah.
It was really, really sick. And Poe's going to come in there, and Poe's a great job at nose tackle. Steve, I mean, this is what's so cool. When in the first round, first 11 picks of the draft, you go and take a nose tackle, he is going to be a cornerstone for your team for a decade plus to come. Yep. And you got him locked up, and you don't have to pay him an obscene amount of money, but he's going to be huge.
That is correct. Yep. That is true.
And it was a great pick.
Folks, we got to get going. I know it's only 11 picks.
It's a lot more than we promised.
It is. You know, Jeff promised 3. So.
And then we said we'd do 10, and we did 11. So, ha-ha. We back at you when we can.
We will get back at you when
weather
we can.
Permitting.
Jeffrey and I, we need to sit down. First of all, I need to get healthy.
We have to have a business meeting. I got sick at the draft. I gave it to Steven.
We need to figure out what we are doing with our schedule.
We don't know what we're doing.
Let's just say, once again, our sympathies and our prayers and thoughts go out to the family of Junior Seau. May he rest in peace. And for the Baltimore Ravens, good luck without T-Sizzle for half of the season.
And to the New Orleans Saints, good luck.
Because
you need it.
They need a hug. I think they need a hug.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I need, you know what? They do. They need it. And I can't.
And you
it.
Don't have it in your I cart, don't. Steven. I need a hug. How's that? You don't have it, dude. I know you need a hug for not having that need a hug. Steven was on a hug thing when we were in New York. He wanted to keep hugging me.
No, you just needed. You just looked like you needed.
I was sick.
You were sick. You were mopey. You kind of walked around like you had lost
I was sick.
Like you lost your dog and your favorite towel or something. I don't know. And I'm like, dude, do you need a hug? Because I will give you one.
I
love
hug.
You.
I needed to feel better.
Yes.
That was it. My sinuses.
Do you feel better now?
I've just got a lot of stuff, but yeah.
Because you gave it to me.
Yeah.
Jerk.
The sinus pain is pretty insane.
People, that's all the time we've got. I hope you had fun following us on Twitter and Facebook during
and
the draft.
And Talk Sport Radio.
Talk Sport Radio. We had lots of fun giving all that info out. And Charlotte Jackson, if you're listening, how you doing? All right, there you go. That's all the time we got. I'm Steven Miranda.
GF Ellis.
For NFL Rants and Rays. We're out.